let's just give an abbreviated update here on what's coming up, as you have a special broadcast coming up this week, I believe. It'll be, Tuesday morning?
Tuesday morning.
Coming out of Monday morning.
Yeah, so starting late Monday night, at the end of the day Monday, going into Tuesday morning, it really starts at 00 hour on Tuesday.
Okay.
Going to 2 a.m. and that's Central Time. And to get details, I've reserved, and this is something I just did on my own because this is such an important topic. I'll be on the internet with three live streams, and then I've secured one of the biggest transmitters in the country, 400,000-watt station out of Nashville, to transmit over the whole country, and it's on shortwave. 3215 is the frequency, and okay. All this information is on my webpage,
right,
which is jmccsci.com. So seven letters, jmccsci.com, which is short for J. McCanny Science, but okay. Most people have trouble spelling all of that. So.
I like the acronym and the abbreviation there, jmccsci.com. And all the information here for the special shortwave broadcast, and that coming up out of Monday in the earlier part of Tuesday, 00 hours.
Central Time, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It'll be on the internet. You'll have some really good secured network that my normal radio show is on during the week. They've volunteered a couple hours, and then I procured 2 hours of shortwave time, which I'm just paying for out of my pocket. And that station covers the entire United States and a good part of the world. It's a very strong signal.
I'm talking a bit about this special coming up, some extended in-depth coverage about the electrical nature of this solar system. Kind of goes back to Velikovsky, doesn't it?
Right, and that's the thing that a lot of people have, this man's name has been ridiculed,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
But been exploited and ridiculed.
Right, exactly. Well, people have used his material, even in standard science.
Mm-hmm.
But what he said, Velikovsky was studying calendars and ancient texts. What he wanted to do was put a timeline in history. He was a tremendously intelligent man. So he went through the archives in a lot of the great museums of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what he realized is all the ancient cultures were talking about the same thing. They said there was a big disaster, and it was caused by this comet, which became the planet Venus. And he wrote a couple books, Worlds in Collision,
right.
Ages in Chaos, and Earth in Upheaval. Were the three books that he wrote. The first one was Worlds in Collision. Well, actually, it was not the first one. It was the first one that became popular. And it became very popular, much to the disappointment of astronomers. And when the news media went to the astronomers and said, well, you're saying that this guy is crazy. What's your story? And this is where many of the modern astronomical theories that we hear today came from. Because modern astronomers had no idea. They didn't even know what a comet was. They had never seen a nucleus of a comet before,
mm-hmm.
And on and on. So anyway, they said, well, they must be these dirty snowballs. And they said there couldn't be anything electrical about them, and that's where they started this idea that space is electrically neutral. And
right.
So all of these concepts from standard science were installed back then basically to refute Velikovsky. And in fact, what turned out to be true and what I discovered was that they were wrong on all of these counts scientifically. Well, in the 50s, Velikovsky did not have the scientific information we have today.
Right.
And so they said, since he contradicted standard science, he must be wrong. And Velikovsky had made some tactical mistakes. But what I always thought is he just should have said, look, I'm not a scientist. You guys are the scientists. You figure it out. And he didn't. He tried to, you know, be a something that he was not, and that's a scientist. But really what he did was discover the historical writings. And then when I got to Cornell University and I was doing my studies and I started seeing space probe data, and that's the other thing. A lot of my work came from actually being on site where the data was coming in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it confirmed my theoretical work, which was already well established, that, in fact, electricity and the effects of electricity in space were very well described in the data. But at any rate, the idea that comets could become planets became kind of a, oh, this is ridiculous, because that's one of the other theories that standard science came up with, that there was this big cloud of matter and it all collapsed and that's where all the planets came from. But it doesn't answer, it brings up more questions than it answers. And the real story is that the planets came from comets that came into the solar system, and the few that became planets were big. So Earth, our moon, Venus, Mercury, all of the planets were adopted one at a time and captured into the solar system. And the issue with Comet Holmes is it's a perfect example of a small object that was originally captured by Jupiter. It's one of the Jupiter family of comets. And it was brought into the solar system by capture and put ended up where it is today between Mars and Jupiter. And in fact, every now and then it gets kicked off by one of these electrical alignments with the other planets. And eventually it will get larger and larger. So this is one of the rare ones. And it's going to be around for a long time to come. And it's just going to keep forming and having these encounters. In fact, December 22nd, Earth and Mars and the comet are going to align.
Okay. Net effect of that yet? Any understanding of what may take place here and how it might affect us?
Well, it could have another significant brightening here on or around that time, and that'll just keep the process going. So that originally it had the same kind of effect where it first brightened when it was first discovered,
right,
and then it kind of started to go away and become dimmer, and then all of a sudden, woof, there it went again. And this has happened a few times throughout history since 1892.
When it connects in December with Earth, will it affect our weather, possibly?
And that's one of the other effects, is that it will, in fact, it already has affected our weather. When all of this was going on with Venus and Mercury, Mars, and the comet, we were not that far off. So a lot of times when these big electrical currents are moving through outer space, they will affect our weather. And in fact, we had Hurricane, I believe it was called Noel, that was coming up in the Atlantic, and it really caused a lot of damage. It got all the way up to Massachusetts, and that's meteorologists said, oh, this hurricane will die off soon as it crosses the Bahamas. Well, it didn't lose any punch. Went all the way up to Massachusetts, where they had hurricane force winds. I don't know if you remember that. That was late in October.
Right.
Then this hurricane went all the way across the Atlantic to the North Sea. It still had hurricane force winds, forced the British to take all the workers off their North Sea oil rigs. And then a couple days later, a huge low pressure cell formed up in the Arctic and came down over Scandinavia and caused tremendous flooding up there and a lot of damage, wind damage. So these, and then at the same time, we had three typhoons in the Pacific, one of them ending up in India, in Bangladesh, if you remember just a week ago. At the same time, I believe it was November 6th, was when the major Chilean earthquake occurred. So these are the kind of things that get triggered by earthquakes. In fact, I'm going to be presenting some of this information shortly at a scientific conference with some international scientists.
Wow.
So the international scientific community is familiar with what I'm doing. They're, you know, I'm presenting this in the standard scientific world, and they're starting to accept that, in fact, these things are happening.
Absolutely, Jim. And again, this radio special, you'll be on shortwave, heard around the world, and some very powerful wattage there. And the information is on Jim's website, www.jmcccsci.com. That'll be earlier part of a Tuesday here in our time zone, coming out of Monday right at midnight, if I have that correct.
Right, yeah. So very early Tuesday morning, midnight to 2 a.m. Central Time. And I'm going to be, at that time, I'll have a couple hours, so I'm going to be presenting some new, as yet unheard information. Of course, I've been posting what we've been talking about here. I've been posting on my webpage since the 23rd, since this very first started.
Yeah.
So it's been really the place people have been going for information, and my hit rate on my page, of course, whenever
has to be very busy.
Oh yeah, and the people pointing things out. It's very interesting to see the public, just like Brad. When you see things now, the public, I am well educated, so they know what to look for, and. You know, I don't have a chance to read all of the popular press
right.
in all the places, but people will snip it out and send it to me and say, look at what they're saying over here. And, you know, just point out the kind of, misinformation that people are trying to pass off out there.
Will this get bigger again if it lights up again? Will it attract more into it if it connects indeed in December like you're talking about? Will we see it continue to grow?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and this is not going to go away. And as I said, the lack or the dimming of this is actually due to the fact that it's becoming bigger.
Wow.
And in other words, it's covering a much bigger area of the sky. So the luminosity is actually going down. And there are two parts to a comet lighting up. One of them being the light that's reflected off the dust particles around the comet that the sunlight reflects off of. The second level of brightness comes from an electron stream that passes through the comet and actually lights it up like a light bulb. So this is what was going on, and that's why comets look many times bluish. Because it's just like a neon light. You've got electrons passing through the region from the sun, and in fact, it lights up like a light bulb.
The website, www.jmccsci.com, and an internet special, also on shortwave around the world, talking about in some great detail what has happened, where it's all going. Talking about Comet 17P, Comet Holmes. Looking forward to listening to this, Jim, as you talk about 2 hours in-depth and uninterrupted with some new information that we haven't even spoken about here and on the air. I'd like you, as we have just a few moments left here, as you talk about your early work and your understanding that aha moment with the electrical nature of the solar system and where it's led you. You talk about your incredible resources, which people can find there on the website also. But go back to that moment when all the dots kind of connected for you, when you talk about the nature of comets and the electrical nature of the solar system.
Well, the let me give an example, because there was so much data coming in when I was at Cornell. This is just one example. The Voyager spacecraft was going out by Saturn at the time, and it went by a small moon and discovered the small moon. They didn't know it was there. Just by accident, the spacecraft came within a very short distance of this moon, but what was strange was all of the magnetic and electrical effects that occurred as the spacecraft went by this moon of Saturn. And so I was daily in these meetings as the data came in at Cornell. And there was no way to explain this deviation of the spacecraft with a small moon, because the moon was so small that we couldn't see it with telescopes from Earth. So that meant that the moon had to be under 200 miles in diameter. So with such a small moon, either it had to be extremely dense, like the density of a neutron star, which did not seem very likely, or it was due to electrical effects. So I made some calculations, and I actually published a paper in the astrophysics journals dealing with that concept and spacecraft charging and the other effects. And that got published, but there were two camps, basically one camp, I should say, in the standard astronomical journals, and that was that there was no electrification, there was no electricity in outer space, that space was electrically neutral. So the editors got a lot of grief for publishing my paper from the standard scientists of that day, and basically said, you can't publish any more of this. So I continued doing my work, but that was just one example of clear proof that something electrical was going on there. And then when you saw the magnetic field readings, that was another indication. It just confirmed my theoretical work that and what I was doing was discovering theoretically how all of this worked, how the discharges worked, yes. The causes of spacecraft being moved in space, or the, you know, being flipped, or the orientation of the spacecraft being flipped, and all of the signatures in the data that you would see. Because, see, none of these spacecraft were ever designed to go out and see electric fields. So what I had to do is take data that from instruments that were never designed to do this, and, in fact, pull data or derive results out of data, and so I got good at doing that. There's another example, a modern example, where we have a satellite around the sun. It's called SOHO, Solar Observatory, Heliospheric Observatory, and it observes the sun. Well, every now and then there are X-ray bursts, and it also measures the electrons and protons coming from the sun. And what you get is a tremendous electron burst, and then all of a sudden the electron count goes down to zero, and you get this tremendous, you count the electrons. First of all, they rise up, then they drop down to zero, and then you get a tremendous burst of X-rays. And so what I determined, scientists kept saying, well, this is a solar X-ray burst, and I said, no. This is not from the sun. These X-rays are being generated locally. And so those are in my published papers also. But here you have scientists who designed the spacecraft who are taking the data, and they have no idea that these X-rays are generated locally right at the spacecraft.
My.
So that's just another example of how I have to take data from a spacecraft that was not designed to be in electric fields and analyze it and interpret it to confirm what my theoretical work says.
Wow. Incredible. And you've put it together in some great resources that people will find there on the website. And it's very reader-friendly, user-friendly, and gives us that kind of information and education in how to spot, let's say, the imposters and really a better understanding as we read some of these news stories about what's really going on here with this incredible solar system. And there's much more to come when you talk about Comet Holmes, as you talk about its future and what you'll be talking about in that radio special that's coming up, coming out of Monday, starting at midnight Central Time here.
Right. And just to give you a little preview of, I'll be reviewing a lot of the standard issues with Comet Holmes, give a little bit of a summary of where it started and how it got to where it is today. But there's some very specific things in the history of Comet Holmes that I'm going to go into some detail, and those will prove to be very interesting.
Okay.
And that's material that people have not seen before. So,
will you talk a bit about what's coming up in December with the comet in terms of its connection with the planet here and what might be possible? And will you talk also about what the future might bring here in terms of some of the stuff that we spoke about earlier in terms of the comet itself as it continues to grow and brighten or weaken?
Well, yeah, the December 22nd alignment, in fact, we talked about these alignments last spring when we were talking about doing our weather show this December. I always make these predictions, and you ask me when are the significant weather conditions in the solar system going to be, and I pegged the August one right on the nose.
Yep.
And I said there won't be much of a hurricane season this year because we just don't have all the alignments and the electrical conditions necessary. And I was right on with that.
Absolutely. We've got about 30 seconds left here, Jim.
So the December 22nd alignment, I said, okay, this is going to be significant because we have cross-solar system alignments, but we didn't know about Comet Holmes at that time.
Absolutely. So we have another part of the equation here that you'll be talking about in this radio special coming up here on the earlier part of Tuesday, right at midnight.
Right, exactly. Right. So I encourage people to listen either on the internet or if they have a shortwave radio. There may be other carriers also that come in to pick it up.
Okay, and that'll be posted on your webpage at www.jmccsci.com. Jim, thank you much for this Comet Holmes update. I'll put you on hold, and we'll come back in just a moment. Be listening for that Comet Holmes special.